I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
Hello and welcome back to the Functional Nerds Podcast. We have not yet changed the name to How to Bore Gail Carriger. We're still thinking about that. Gail did comment on Twitter about that, so we may or may not go down that road. I don't know yet.
And that voice you hear chuckling is one Django Wexler, a longtime friend of the show. We've had him on quite a few times over the years, and he's got a brand new book out, and it is called The Ship of Smoke and Steel. It is being billed as a YA fantasy. And Django, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back. I haven't heard the new theme song. I don't know if it's actually new, but it's new since the last time I was here. That's pretty good.
I think.
Has it really been that long?
It may have been that long, yeah. Or at least maybe you didn't play it for me last time I was here.
It might have been, Patrick, the last time that Django was on, we had the song, but I don't know if you were playing it live. I think maybe you just would throw it in post. Now you actually play it live.
That's possible.
So there you go. Yeah, Patrick badgered me for a long time to because I've written and recorded theme songs for like three or four other podcasts, and we didn't have one for a long time. So
And people were taking other songs that he recorded, and they're like, "Hey, can I use this as my podcast?" And he's like, "Sure, use it."
And finally, Patrick badgered me strongly enough to actually sit down and write and record one. So there you go.
Well, it sounds lovely.
Oh, well, thank you, Django.
To be honest with you, Django, I'm sick of hearing it. Yes. Because I've had to hear it multiple times a week for about 27 years now.
It's something I think about a lot with the podcast theme songs, ours and any other one I've written specifically for other people, even though I don't really do that anymore. It cracks me up because the actual, you know, serious songs that I was putting out, I would spend months working on every little detail and making sure every note was as perfect as it could be. And with the podcast themes, I would knock them out pretty quickly and not be too worried about it. And I think that's hilarious because the podcast themes have undoubtedly been heard many more times than any of my other songs. Technically I should spend more time on that, but
it could be worse. I listened to the History of Rome podcast, which is great. I highly recommend it, but he did a Q&A thing and he talked about his intro music, which is just this little guitar riff. And he's like, I didn't expect this project to go on as long as it did. And so I had just picked some like random guitar sample that came with my like audio editing software.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I'm stuck with it for like 150 episodes and I'm totally sick of it.
The original kind of themes for both Functional Nerds and SF Signals podcast were the random sample thing that you can create in GarageBand.
Yes, I think that
would... I created a couple of those, just adding some instruments, and I set the time and I did all this kind of stuff, and then I hit, you know, play, and it would just record like a 30-second riff for me, and then that's what I used originally.
The Apple stuff specifically you would hear in a lot of different places because because everyone had so many people had Macs
and GarageBand.
The GarageBand stuff was, you know, you bought the license to that too, but anybody could use it. So you did hear that stuff pop up quite a bit. But getting back on topic, so Django, your book Ship of Smoke and Steel, now this is a separate series from your Shadow Campaigns, correct?
It is, yeah. So Shadow Campaigns is done. We came out with book 5 last year, The Infernal Battalion, which kind of wraps up the story. Well, it does wrap up the story, think. I mean, people have been like, oh, well, what comes next? And I'm like, nothing comes next. It's over. The characters,
yeah, you're the author.
Characters have gotten to their conclusion, right? You know, I mean, you could tell more stories in that universe, but the character stuff, I feel like, hits the end of its arc. And that's really what I'm there for. So I may come back to it, you know, someday, not ruling it out. But I got like a million other things that I want to do. And then I actually also finished Forbidden Library, which very emphatically comes to the end of its story, because I don't want to spoil anything, but there's major changes to the universe and things get resolved. And so I have to start some new things. And so Ship of Smoke and Steel is the first of those things. It's a YA series from Tortine, and a brand new series. It'll be a trilogy. I just turned in the rough draft of book two, so I'm working on edits for that now. So that'll be, you know, one a year, I think, is the goal, as usual.
Is this, cool. Now, did this start in your mind as YA? Did it sort of reveal itself to be YA as you were writing
it? Did the marketing department decide it was
yes,
YA?
I'm always curious about that.
In this case, the answer is a little complicated. So this is a very old story for me. I think I first tried to write this something like 15 years ago. I had one of these projects. So after I had written a couple of books that went to small press, and I wanted to do something bigger and cooler. And I think I was kind of high on Malazan Book of the Fallen and Game of Thrones. And so I started putting together this like gigantic world building project, this like one of these huge fantasy projects, the kind that where there's like a pages and pages of timeline, and the timeline begins with like zero, the world is created by the elder gods, right? And in retrospect, this was a doomed project. It was just like way too big, and it was just full of every random thing that I thought of at any given time. But one of the things that I had in this project was this story about these two kids who get sent on board this giant steel ghost ship in a kind of medieval setting. And the ship is full of monsters and also other people who have been sort of put on board it, outcasts and exiles. And they have this kind of Lord of the Flies society that these kids have to fit into. And I had originally conceived it as a more sort of traditional epic fantasy. But that was also 15 years ago. So, you know, YA as a genre was very different back then. And I also didn't know very much about it. You know, I was very just straight line adult fantasy, adult science fiction at the time. So, coming back to these projects after, you know, we'd wrapped up these series and we're like, okay, we got a time to pitch some new projects to editors. And I was going through some stuff and I had a lot of fun with the middle grade series. So I was like, I want to do a YA series. And I was looking through my notes and I was like, you know, now having read more modern YA, I felt like this would fit really well as a YA story. And so I went with it. We pitched it to editors and we were pitching a number of projects. And this is one of the ones that, Ali, my editor at Tortine, just like really loved it and, took it. So this incarnation of it was YA from the beginning, but it has roots in an older sort of failed story.
Let me ask you this, and I apologize if I'm putting you on the spot with it, because sometimes I ask this question and authors don't know, and then they feel terrible. I love the cover. I love artwork. Do you know who the artist is, and what are your feelings about it?
Okay. So I love it. And when I went to tour, they were like, well, so what do you think about artwork? You know, as usual, the publishers are the ones who get to do the cover art, but they, you know, kindly ask my opinion. And so I said, well, my favorite artist who's currently working is Richard Anderson, who does all these wonderful covers. He did Brian Staveley's Unhewn Thrones covers. He did Dinosaur Knights. He's done a whole bunch of great fantasy covers. And so I was like, something in that style would be good. And they're like, oh, I think we could get him. And so they did. And I was like, oh, so I had on my like my bucket list of like have a Richard Anderson cover. And I guess I get to check that one off. And of course, he did a wonderful job. He has this great sort of not completely realistic, this sort of like slightly impressionist style. That
yes.
It's just great. I love it. So I'm super glad to get to work with him.
Yeah, I love those Brian Staveley covers too. I'll have to look it up. I don't know if you would know, but I just finished reading Kings of the Wild, the Nicholas Lee.
Oh yeah, that's him too. Kings of the Wild. Oh, that's what I thought. Are both.
That's what I thought. That's why when I saw your new cover, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I think that's the same artist because it's the same style for sure. Yeah, it's that. Yeah, it is a little. It's realistic, but there is kind of an impressionistic thing, mm-hmm. and it's beautiful. Yeah, it's like a slight hint of like comic art, but not really. It's a perfect balance, I think.
I think it's a great. His style has a great balance between, like, depicting stuff from the book, but not going so sort of like realistic looking and literal that it has that like 70s cover look, where sometimes you look at one of those old fantasy covers and it just looks like four dudes standing around a sword and you're like, oh, that's not all that exciting.
Right. So yeah, it's great artist and awesome cover and makes a difference. I'm sorry. I know it comes up a lot, but I think it does make a difference, your cover. I don't know if it makes a difference in book sales, but it certainly makes me look at a book differently if I think it's got a great cover.
I love it. I mean, it's funny, you know, as an author, when people are like, your book is really good, you're always like, oh no, it's not so good. Thank you. But when people talk about your cover, and they're like, your cover is awesome. You're like, I know, isn't it great? Because like, I didn't do it. So I feel like I don't have to be modest.
Yes. I think that's a good way to look at it. But cool. Well, I'm looking forward to checking the book out. And I hope our listeners will as well. Before we get on to our next section, I do want to thank our listeners, the ones that are backing us already, who support the show every week over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Thank you for those who are backing us. We really appreciate it. And for those of you who enjoy the show who aren't backing us, consider doing so. Just go to patreon.com/functionalnerds and you can pledge $1 a month, a couple dollars a month, whatever works for you. And it would help us out greatly. So consider doing that. And thanks again to the people who are already supporting us. Now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Django, why don't you tell us what your pick is?
So one of the weird things about being an author is that often I'll read things and I'll be like, oh, I want to recommend this to anything, but usually I'm reading an arc, and so like it's not available yet, because like that's a lot of the reading that I do, so I can't really like
talk about it. That's okay. No, you can, because a lot of people ask me what's my marketing plan for the podcast,
uh-huh.
and it's guilt and torture.
Because I've read some great arcs, like Max Gladstone's Empress of Forever is fantastic, Tamsin Muir's. Let me get that name right. I think that's right. Gideon the Ninth is fantastic. But what I'm going to talk about is Children of Ruin by Adrian Tchaikovsky, because if you live in the US like me, the first book in that series, Children of Time, was only released in the UK and only recently came out in the US, I think like a few months ago. So you may have missed it. And Children of Ruin is the sequel, which is coming out later this year. And these are both great. They are science fiction in a kind of, I've been describing it as like, it feels classic, but not dated. Like it has the kind of big idea feel of like my favorite, like 1960s SF, but without all the like, you know, racism and homophobia and, you know, crap that came with people writing in the 50s or 60s or all that stuff, which is always kind of a minefield going back to the golden age, because you're like, oh. But so this is like, it's perfect in that respect. I'm trying to think how much plot summary to do without spoilers.
I would just give an overview, like, you know, it's about X, Y, and Z.
Okay, so it's about the humans, human spacefaring civilization is terraforming planets, and they're terraforming this planet as an experiment, and they have this special virus that is going to cause supercharged evolution. And the plan is to introduce monkeys to this planet and then supercharge their evolution so that we uplift them and then we will have another intelligent species to talk to. But something goes terribly wrong, and the monkeys don't make it to the And then shortly afterwards, human civilization collapses. And so later, thousands of years later, a human ark ship fleeing the kind of polluted remnants of Earth arrives at this planet. And what they find is that the uplift virus has created intelligent spiders who are now the dominant civilization on this planet. And the remaining humans like encounter them and they have to deal with that. And it's great. And so if you've read like old SF, like Dragon's Egg, by Robert L. Forward, which where you get to like watch a whole civilization sort of ascend, the spider side of the story feels a lot like that. And he just does such a good job of writing kind of alien feeling characters that are still really sympathetic. So I like it. And then the second book, Children of Ruin, they find another planet and it, there's other intelligent creatures and it has similar themes, but it's still just great. So
I just can't believe that anyone would think that creating a virus to supercharge evolution on another planet would be a bad idea.
I know, right? Like what could go wrong?
There's nothing that could go wrong with that. It's like, I still watch The Big Bang Theory. I know a lot of people in the community don't like it, but I like it. And they had an episode where the geologist dude found this meteorite and it had something in the center and he wanted to cut it open. And the comic book guy, Stuart, he's like, have you not read any of the comics in this place? Do you not understand? This is like a primer for this exact situation. You cannot open that meteorite up.
Yeah. You know, it's funny with Adrian Tchaikovsky. I've been aware of him for a long time, and I feel like when Lou Anders was at Pyre and they were putting all that great stuff out, I feel like they did a series from him too. That it was a fantasy series, but there was like a creature insect kind of theme in it as well.
He definitely has an interest in insects. He did a novella for Tor.com called Spiderlight, which I think is criminally underappreciated. It's a funny, touching sort of fantasy adventure story parody involving giant spiders, which is great. But it's definitely kind of his thing. I respect that. Yeah, he's had an interesting career because he had a 10-book series from them, The Shadows of the Apt.
Right.
And then since then, he's been kind of bouncing around and doing a bunch of other stuff. He did a book called Ironclads, which was really good. I really liked almost all the stuff of his that I've read.
Yeah, he's someone I really want to check out because that insect thing, I guess it's one of those things where you're sort of attracted and repelled by the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I find insects so repelling, but yet also kind of drawn to those kinds of creepy ideas.
You should read Children of Time. It will make you love spiders.
Okay, then I will put that on my list.
It just sounds like it doesn't bug him like it does other people.
Oh, Patrick. Oh, boy. There you go. All right, well, Patrick, what's your pick then?
My pick.
You're dying for that.
Well, I don't use the drums as often as you would like.
No, I want more drops on the show.
I know you okay. do. So we talked a long time ago when I got the new iPad Pro. I also got Comixology, and I was really enjoying Comixology. But the thing was, they had a lot of independence. They had a ton of Marvel. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything hardly for DC at all. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we talked about my supposition on that was that because they were about to launch the DC online experience, which was going to include DC Comics, that they had pulled everything from Comixology. Mm-hmm. And they then launched the DC Universe, which included comics. And people, it kind of fell flat with a lot of people. They're like, this isn't a great mix of comics and it's kind of difficult to use and we don't really get why it's here kind of stuff. Well, suddenly about a month ago, Comixology started sending me emails going, DC Comics are here. DC Comics are here.
Saw that. Yeah.
So my pick this week is DC Comics is now on Comixology and a ton of their stuff as part of the unlimited subscription.
Cool.
So if you have an unlimited subscription, you can now borrow a lot of DC Comics, more new stuff, but they also have a lot of they're kind of anchoring on Batman. So there's a lot of older Batman graphic novels as well. So if you've ever wanted to try to catch up or just, you know, see what's going on currently with DC or read back a little bit into some of the archives, they've also got some Green Arrow stuff and Superman stuff and different things. Now's the time to do that on Comixology. So that's kind of my pick. Tons of DC stuff out there. Go check it out.
Cool. I wonder, awesome.
If you decided, I want to read every comic that has ever featured Batman, I wonder if you could finish before you died.
I bet you couldn't.
Is there more than one lifetime of Batman now?
It might be. And the problem is similar to A-listers like Spider-Man over on Marvel. Whenever a comic is flagging and they're trying to boost the sales, they will do a crossover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they will have some sort of Spider-Man shows up in Daredevil or Batman shows up in Doom Patrol. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. So that kind of happens a lot. So I think it would be difficult to gather all of them.
There was a period in the 90s where we used to joke that Wolverine was starring in about five of his own comics and also everyone else's comic.
Oh, yeah. They would throw him on the cover all the time of other comics. I remember that very clearly. Very clearly.
Did anybody catch there was a picture going around on social media, and I want to say it was Henry Cavill's Superman. It was like a shot from one of the Justice League things. Mm-hmm. Before he had the mustache, like it was one of the original shoots. Yeah. And he was standing, you know, and there was like a green screen and there was a guy behind him and everybody's going, look, young Wolverine. Cause he looked like Logan, but he's obviously a page or something on the set. He's got like a headset and everything, but he looked like young Logan and they're like, Logan's going to be in Justice League.
They had to digitally edit him out because, like, they're like, Wolverine, you're too popular. You can't be in Justice League 2.
Patrick, let me ask you this about Comixology in general. So where I thought Django was going with your question about – with his question about Batman, if you go into the app and you search Batman, I'm assuming you just get all the Batman-titled comics that'll come up.
Correct.
Like you wouldn't get his appearances in other books, I suspect.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, because as an example, when you search Batman Beyond, you get Superman Beyond.
Mm.
Because Batman appears in Superman Beyond.
Yeah, so I want search to be better. And my follow-up question to that would be, could you – I know a lot of people – we talk a lot about audiobooks who will follow – certain voice actors as well, and they'll search Audible for the voice actor and I know some people that are just like, oh yeah, I'll listen to anything that this particular voice actor does, even if it's an author that I don't know about because I love their work so much. Same idea in comics. Can you follow, rather than specific titles, can you follow or search specific writers, artists, pencilers, colorists, what have you? Can you follow them or search specifically for their work?
I believe you can.
Okay, because that would be great. Because Django, as an artistic fellow, I suspect that's some. I think some people will use comics as an example. Some people are just like, I love Batman and I read Batman or whatever, name whatever your character is. But I know for me, and I went through a brief period of reading comics when I was in college, I immediately gravitated towards certain writers, but especially artists. Like I had favorite artists.
Yeah.
And I would just buy everything that artist did.
That's definitely been a thing for a while because there have been some superstar artists even going back into the 90s. You know, it's one of those things where even if the official app doesn't let you search for it, I bet there's a wiki, right?
That's true. That's true.
If I wanted to do the project of like reading all of Batman, I would find the like obsessive Batman wiki that I'm sure exists somewhere and like documents his every appearance.
You know, you're right. And what I wanted to bring it to is,
and John, yeah. I'll just say I opened up Comixology in my browser. The default search is by title, uh-huh. publisher, creator.
Okay.
Or genre.
Okay.
That's the default. And I put in Larry Hama.
Okay.
And it pulled up, you know, he's got a creator's page in Comixology. And then it started pulling up like his work on Wolverine, G.I. Joe, that kind
cool.
of stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, that's really cool because I would definitely like that. Cause I know for when I at the period that I was into comics, I loved Greg Capullo. Capullo at the time, his start was with Moon Knight, and then
I remember Moon Knight.
Yeah, and then he was the artist that did Spawn when Todd McFarlane didn't want to draw anymore or wanted, you know, because he became a businessman, McFarlane, and he didn't have time to draw a monthly comic, so he hired Capullo to do Spawn. So I really loved Capullo. He did a bunch of other things. I feel like Capullo was on X-Force, and that's probably where I discovered him. He did a run on X-Force that I really enjoyed. So I would totally follow certain artists, and that's good that you can do that on Comixology. And Django bringing up the point about wikis, I think I'm just going to have to be one of those nerds that does a wiki for the kind of music that I like, because I find it super, and I'm sure I could probably find some sources, but I find it very frustrating that, and I use Google Play Music, but you could put this out because I don't think it works on any of the streaming apps, be it Spotify or Apple Music. It would be so easy, I think, just in a database or to whatever kind of tags. Let's say there's a guitar player that I really like, and I read all these magazines and I find out like, oh yeah, this guitar player is playing on this new album. Like he just did some session work and is playing a couple guitar solos here. All of that stuff should be tagged so that
you would,
and especially if you, yeah. Well, let's use now I'm talking about specific types of like newer, like kind of metal that I really like. But even if you go, I love jazz too. Now jazz is littered with that, where that's people who are huge jazz fans will have their favorite trumpet player. And well, guess what? They all, because those albums were made so quickly because they were live. They would go into a studio and cut an album in a day. And so they all played on each other's albums. You know, you had Coltrane and Miles Davis and even the lesser known.
I'm sure there's a wiki for that.
Yeah, for jazz, I'm sure you can find it. But my point is
has obsessively documented it. Is it that?
And I'll,
that's the internet. I'm sorry, keep going. Over.
Yeah, I'm sure it exists. But to me, I think that's something where, and maybe it's just it would be too much work and they don't care about it enough. But I'm sorry, when I open up Google Play Music, I should be able to put Miles Davis in. And not only should I get the Miles Davis albums, I should get all the albums that and all the songs that he's played on.
You can risk information overload, though.
I guess so. Yeah.
Like the fact making these things kind of accessible. So I've been reading some of the Star Wars comics, right?
I have too.
I really like Dr. Aphra, the new series.
Yeah.
But like, man, do they not make it easy to follow. Like to catch up on Dr. Aphra, you need to read like, there's like a bunch Vader. Of Vader. There's a crossover with the main Star Wars title. Yep. There's the Dr. Aphra, the first book. Then there's another crossover. Then there's some more. And I'm just like if, like I had to go to Wikipedia and like carefully figure out what I need to read. And I'm like, you guys are not making it easy for me to, you know, buy the things that I need to buy.
That is hilarious because that exact same thing is what I went through on Comixology. There was no DC, but there was tons of Marvel and they had tons of the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
So I started reading Vader because John and some other people had talked about what a great series it was. And so I started reading Vader and I started liking that Dr. Aphra character. And I get to the point where the crossover happens and you have to go to the other book.
Yeah.
And so I go and then I start catching up on that book and I get all the way caught up and get to where, you know, she starts appearing. And then there's a point where like she leaves that and then goes somewhere else. And the next graphic novel I was able to get skips over.
Yeah.
Like there's an in-between part.
I know.
Well, I stopped. I stopped reading the Star Wars comics because I couldn't find the in-between part.
Yeah. It's weird
because I wanted to follow her story.
When they publish it as hardcovers, right? Like I have the Vader hardcover and it includes all the different things from like a bunch of different things, plus the annuals, plus the blah, blah, blah. And so they include a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, this is the way it should always be. Why is it not like this?
I'm right there with you.
But, you know, I assume they think that this is good for them in terms of, like, getting people to look at other books. But
yeah, probably.
But I think there's a risk of lockout, right? Like, that you're going to lock people out of your continuity by making it too complicated.
Well, yeah, I stopped.
Yeah.
I stopped and I moved on to other stuff because I couldn't find what I wanted. Now, John, as far as the databases and the wikis and stuff like that, Wikipedia, you know, is user-based. Users drive the content there. So I think what you want would be something very similar where users who are as much into the topic as you are would be going in there and filling out that information and making it searchable. I don't know if you know this or not. Like, I just saw an article that talked about there's one guy who is responsible for I want to say it was 35% of all the content on Wikipedia. He has touched and edited 35% of that content. Like he got a most influential person from Time kind of thing.
You have to wonder how much of that goes on behind the scenes of the internet, right? You know, and someday it'll break. That guy will decide to quit and people will be like, well, Wikipedia sucks now. What happened?
I don't know where it's at now, but I know at one point when I was many years ago in Wikipedia's earlier days, and the people would say like, oh, you can't just trust Wikipedia. And then it, you know, sort of came out or came to light that, hey, you know what? Wikipedia is actually more accurate than Britannica or whatever. You know, it sort of came to light that, oh, no, because there's so many users constantly patrolling and making sure that the information is accurate, it's actually more. This is what I remember was a thing 10 years ago.
There's a great story where this, because like if something is sufficiently obscure, so there's this great story. This guy, there was an old Saturday morning cartoon called Street Sharks, with, you know, one of these bad toy commercial cartoons. And so this guy, for whatever reason, you'd have to go look up the article, like made up a bunch of fake episodes for Street Sharks, like completely ridiculous episode descriptions, and like posted them somewhere. And they got picked up by some of the wikis that document this sort of thing. And they have now become ineradicable on the internet. Like they're out there and he's like, this was fake. And I tell people it's fake and I cannot get rid of it. And there are now people who swear that they've seen the fake episodes. it's the Bernstein Bears, Nelson Mandela effect, right?
It's the genie movie.
Yes.
Shazam or Kazam or
Kazam.
With Shaq. Yeah.
And so you got to be careful sometimes with the internet. On the other hand, does it really matter, right? Like maybe this is what we have now. It's wikiality. Like maybe that is what Street Sharks was. And like, you know, we've changed it. We've changed history.
Well, now you know, and knowing is happening.
Okay. Django, I'm gonna do that annoying thing that people do with authors where I'm gonna pitch you an idea for your next book.
Oh good, because I don't have enough of those. I only have 30 pages of ideas.
Yes, you know, and then you know, when you get those people that come up to you and they're like, here's the idea. Now you go write it and I'll take half of whatever you make on it. No. But just from what we were just talking about, I'm like, you should have a science fiction novel. And I feel like this would be a good like YA or middle grade one where people are updating Wikipedia pages, or, you know, you can call it something different, you know, within this universe that you're writing about, and whatever that the person writes actually becomes true. There you go. That's my idea. You,
I think I've
you
read
can run
that
with
story,
it.
Story.
Yes, I'm sure it's been. It's not an original idea.
Short story, at least someone has written.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Well, wasn't that the movie with the guy from The Mummy? Like there was the books and the books were coming to life.
I don't
stuff
even know.
That was being written in the books.
Yeah. Anyway.
Brendan Fraser
is the guy from The
Mummy. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't recall this movie, though. Maybe you've made it up, and now you're like, accepting us.
Yeah, could be. Who knows? I realize I never actually did a pick.
No, you haven't.
I'm gonna throw that out there now anyway. I'm not finished with it yet. I have two episodes left, but I'm watching the most recent season of, and I believe it is the final season of the Voltron Legendary Defender on Netflix. I think it wraps up. It feels like it's wrapping up.
I haven't watched any of that. Is it actually good or is it just like nostalgia good?
My opinion is it's actually good.
Okay.
I really like it, but I'll give you a frame of reference, which I often bring up with Voltron, because I believe I've picked it just about every season that it's come out. It's some of the creative team behind it were the same creative team of Avatar: The Last Airbender and Korra. So if you like those shows,
I do like those shows. Super into like original Voltron. So I'm like, if this is a nostalgia thing, then
no, because I looking back, don't think a show like Voltron really holds up very well at all, the original one. But if you like the Avatar: The Last Airbender and Korra, then I think you would like this, and I would certainly recommend watching the first couple episodes. And if it grabs you, it grabs you. And if it doesn't, then don't bother, because now I think there's 8 seasons. But within that, most of those 8 seasons are half seasons. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't just like they. A lot of the seasons are only like 7 episodes or something. Huh. So I think in total it ends up being, I don't know how many episodes it is in the end, but it's not that much. But try it, and if you dig it, then keep going. But if you don't, then no. But it's sort of a similar animation style and a similar kind of warm and fuzzy kind of tone as the Avatar is, and really good world building. Kind of took a lot of the ideas from Voltron, but had them made sense. because it doesn't really.
I've been watching the Clone Wars TV show, the cartoon, which is mostly quite.
Master Kenobi.
Yeah, it's mostly quite good. There are some real duds in the episodes.
Absolutely.
Usually, when they try to go too funny, it gets embarrassingly terrible. But I think my favorite part of it is watching the writers of that show, who are, you know, quite good writers, trying to cope with all the random stuff that George threw into the prequels, like on a whim. Like all the, he's just like, yeah, whatever, we'll do this. And they're like trying to make it actually make some kind of logical sense, which is like, many baffling decisions in the prequels.
How far along are you through Clone Wars?
I'm
right
into
now?
The middle of season 5. So getting close to the end.
Oh.
Okay. Did you get to the D Squad episodes? The one where it's like the droids going on missions? That's the worst.
Is there more than one? I just watched the first one. I thought it was over.
Buckle up, because there's like a whole. Like, that's the hardest thing to get through. It's like, I think it's 5 episodes. Oh, it's a 5 episode arc.
Are you kidding me?
Like, and I think, you know, Lucas was involved in that series quite a bit. And
I'm
think
to blame
he really
just any that. Bad decisions on George.
Yes. I think he was just like, we're doing 5 episodes with the droid squad. Go. And like, I think they just did it.
The thing that it makes really clear to me, the most interesting thing, is that like, when you look at the prequels, like they have to do something with clones, right? Because they talk about the Clone Wars in A New Hope. But the decision to make the clones the good guys is like the most baffling thing ever, because like the amount of effort that the TV show has to put in to try and like make us care about these clone characters, even though they all look the same and have like different haircuts and like they all have the same voice actor. And it's clearly so hard, where like it would have been so much easier if you could just use like normal people. And it's just strange. Like, it would have been so easy to make the clones the disposable bad guys. And so I guess kudos to George for not doing the obvious thing, except then he made the bad guys identical disposable robots. So, you know, maybe he did do the obvious thing.
Well, and it's funny because I think it was J.C. Hutchins posted on Facebook recently. He was talking about General Grievous.
Yeah.
And how General Grievous is just a robot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why, you know, but he's not. And that was funny that he didn't understand that.
Well, if you just watch actually the movies, you might not understand that. You have to watch
right
the TV show.
He's almost like a pre-Vader.
Yeah.
Right? It's almost like they, I believe it was, well, in the original canon, I don't know if it's still canon, it's that whole thing, Dooku arranged for him to crash and be damaged so that they could experiment with cybernetics and trying to make him into something else kind of stuff. So that that's kind of interesting. But I loved the Clone Wars. I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was a great show. And I'm looking forward to the new version whenever it comes out on a platform that I actually use.
Yeah.
And watch.
I love Star Wars, so I've just kind of accepted that I'm watching and reading everything that says Star Wars on it.
Have either of you watched the fan film? And I mentioned it a couple weeks ago, John. Vader Episode 1, Shards of the Past?
No.
I still haven't watched
it. It's really well done, number one. I mean, it's really well done. I was impressed with the production value on this damn thing. Number two, clones are in it.
Ooh, nice. That's cool.
So it's the question that we've brought up on the show before, and I know I understand now that we're boring Gail Carriger, but that's okay. what happened to the clones? Like, how did we get from clones to stormtroopers? You know, it's that whole thing.
Yeah.
And you see some clones because it's right after the kind of the birth of the Empire and the death of the Old Republic. So, or the Republic. So you see clones as part of this, which is very interesting to me.
My favorite explanation of why the clones are the good guys in the prequels is because after the first movies came out, the stormtroopers were super popular, and like, especially with kids who they love stormtroopers. And George was a little uncomfortable with kids dressing up as space Nazis. And so he's like, all right, well, we'll give them the same armor, but they're good guys this time.
Makes sense. To bring it back to the Voltron thing.
Good luck.
Yeah. No, I will say that it's very well done. I really liked the overall story arc. And like I said, I still have two episodes. Maybe I will be very disappointed with how it ends, but I do like the fact that it is going to end, and that it feels like this whole season that they're wrapping things up. And it's great to have that on a cartoon like this, because a lot of times it's just this ongoing thing and then it stops and you're kind of left feeling kind of unfulfilled. And
but John, in the usual Hollywood vein, once they're done with the lions, they're going to start with the cars, and then they're going to do the spaceships.
Have you been watching it?
No.
Oh, okay. Then it's that I won't say anything else, but it's, there's some, I won't say it's like with the cars and the spaceships, but it's, there's a little bit of a wink to that.
I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
Yeah. but it's it uses that original source material, but it's telling a much better story, I think. And I really like the character growth, and I've been watching this season this week, I've been enjoying just being like, this is so cool that the characters in the show have really gone on a journey and are different. It's not the same episode every time. They're in a very different place now.
Netflix and the Netflix model has let American animated stuff kind of catch up to where anime has been. right? Mm-hmm. Because like, you know, like you can talk for hours about the difference between anime and US animation and the difference in attitudes or whatever. But like a big part of it was always the syndication model where like a US show, they were shooting for syndication. It was had to be each episode had to be able to be played in any order. And so they couldn't do a plot, right? Or character growth. It just had to be Monster of the Week every week, all the time. And like the Netflix shows aren't like that. And so they can do plots and character growth.
Right. And that's
I guess
why
Avatar kind of like pioneered that in the US, but then Avatar had a bunch of like problems while it was airing. Nickelodeon didn't quite know what to do with it.
Oh yeah. And they really, and Korra too, I think they really aired it weird at the end where it came out like all at once. And I don't know. Yeah. They really kind of dropped the ball at it in the end, but yeah, I think they did. And I think that's why I enjoyed this one. So yeah, that is my pick. The Voltron one. And yeah, Jen, go check it out. If you, yeah, again, watch the first two episodes. Yeah, you might dig it. I think I
have like 17,000 TV shows to watch.
Of course, that's all we ever talk about on this show is all the stuff that we don't have time to watch.
And books, the book. Yeah,
So for the benefit of our listeners who may not be aware, Django, you're a fan of anime.
I am a fan of anime. I have been for many, many years. Because
we've had you on before to talk about that.
Really? I've forgotten everything that happened before about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So we did have you on before. We actually asked you for recommendations on how someone could get started.
Oh, was this like back when I was writing about anime for SF Signal?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That was fun. I was always sad that SF Signal went away.
Oh, we all are. But if it makes you feel any better, I still get texts from John DiNardo quite a bit.
Are they still? Do you still taunt him about bagels? Is the question.
Yes. Oh God, all the time.
Oh good.
Yeah. The bagel bear claw debate has not ended just because SF Signal has. Okay. I mean, we still go back and forth.
Where's my bagel?
That's some inside baseball right there.
I still randomly take pictures of frozen bagels at the supermarket and text him pictures and saying, "This is what you mean when you say a bagel, right?"
Oh my God.
And to which he's like, "Oh my God, no, no." This is like, and then, you know, if
this is like Mike Cole and Sam Sipes right here.
I will also go and if I'm at a bakery or something and they have a bear claw, I take a picture of a bear claw. I send it to him.
Can we change the topic to space kittens? There's something.
He takes old pictures of me from the internet and he makes them into memes that say, you know, I confess I love bagels, and he sends them to me. Yeah, I mean that's never
true
gonna
friendship
die.
Right here.
I will say it's a little bit awkward. He does send me dick pics.
What? Oh God.
He sends me lots of pictures of Dick Van Dyke.
Hi-oh.
Where's that rim shot again?
So I mean that's gonna go on forever, but I kind of forgot where I was going with all of this. So that's your fault.
You wanted to ask about anime, I think.
Well, what I was going to say is the other thing that we have recommended to people here is the Dragon Prince.
Yeah.
Have you seen that on Netflix?
I have some issues with the Dragon Prince.
Is it the animation? Are you all freaky about the animation?
It's weird.
So you're one of them.
Well,
okay,
but
you're one of them.
It's like, I, you know, admittedly, as an anime guy, I can be kind of an animation snob, but like it's a deliberate choice that they made, and to me, it just looks terrible. The like low frame rates are just, I'm just like, what are you doing?
And they acknowledged that, and they said, you know what, we had some challenges with the animation. We're going to get better at that. We know now what not to do. It's going to get better.
It's a little baffling to me because the sort of animation technique that they're using, the kind of cel shading, sort of making a computer animated thing look like a traditional animated thing, is something that they've been doing in Japan for like a decade, and they've gotten really good at it. And I could rattle off like a dozen shows that use that exact technique and look way better. And I'm like, what, you didn't look at what other people are doing? Like, what's going on?
Don't know.
I didn't dislike the show, but like that jankiness, I just couldn't get past it.
Interesting.
Well, I feel like if we keep talking, we're going to go down a hour and a half anime ramble. So maybe we'll have to have Django back on soon and do some more picks. But Django, thanks for coming on the show. Once again, Django's new book is Ship of Smoke and Steel. It is out now. Anything else you want to tell our listeners before we wrap up?
And Django, can you believe it's already been 53 minutes?
I know. It feels like it's only been 52 minutes.
This is just a drop in the pail. I mean, we used to do what, 4.5 hours on SF Signals podcast?
Yeah, that's why I bailed on that. thank you guys for having me. People check out Ship of Smoke and Steel. If you go to my website, which is djangowixler.com, it'll have all kinds of information. There's an excerpt you can read. If you hit me up on Twitter, I'm at Django Wexler. If you have any questions or just want to, you know, bug me in general. And that's it. My next public appearance is probably at Emerald City Comic Con. We're still working on the schedule, but I will be there in some capacity. And I'm also doing the World Builders party there. So if you go to World Builders, you can buy tickets to play games with me for a good cause. So that's what I'm up to.
Nice. For us, once more, if you dig the show and dig chats with folks like Django, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
So DeNerdo scans our episodes listening for his name.
Oh my God.
So that he can then give me shit.
Okay.
I'm kidding. Come on. But I do want to do a shout out to someone else, Capricorn. Capricorn, I think, is happening as of this episode within days.
Right.
So, you know, there's no better place to be during a polar vortex than Chicago.
Right.
So if you haven't already bought your tickets, I believe for Capricorn 39, I think is the number of the episode, the number. So Capricorn is happening February something through something, probably around Valentine's Day, I want to say. So as this episode goes live, you still have time to get your tickets and buy some, you know, nice warm clothes and head to Chicago.
The polar vortex is ending. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and all-around functional nerd. And my partner in crime on this show is Mr. Daniel.
Thanks, Paul.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.
Damn it, I forgot you're recording. Dude, no.